We are in the season of Christmas. So a basic question for you today is, what is your favorite part of Christmas? Now, my answer to that varies on how old I am. Nowadays, I might say actually coming for worship and singing all those great hymns and carols that we know and love so much, or being with family and having that time together, which can be so hard to do in other occasions, or those traditions of food and celebration. But if I'm honest, my favorite part of Christmas when I was a kid was opening presents. Anybody else? Can I get an amen on that one? And if you like opening presents, or for that matter, giving presents, we really need to give thanks to these wise men who brought to Jesus their gifts. They traveled a great distance bringing gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I've scoured the scriptures, and there are no other than paying tribute to a king, instances of gift giving in this kind of way. And so the idea of giving gifts to one another to celebrate Jesus' birth comes from these wise men. Now, I admit, I am not a great gift giver, but I know a few people, including our daughter Jasmine, who are fantastic gift givers. Does anybody know a great gift giver in your life? And by that I mean she has a knack of finding just the perfect thing. She's so thoughtful and so skillful at finding something that matches the person. And when you are on the receiving end of one of her gifts, it's like, I would have never thought of this for myself, but it's perfect. Now, part of what makes her, and other, I think, people who are good at gift giving, part of what makes Jasmine a good gift giver is she's a good gift receiver. Her love language, if you're familiar with that book, is gifts. And so she loves to receive gifts, which I think fine-tunes her sensibilities to be a good gift giver. And so I think there's something deeply profound about the ability to give a gift and to receive it. Some of us are not good at giving gifts or receiving gifts, and that's something that maybe we should work on. And it's kind of fun to give and receive gifts. I know each year when I think of what she might do for Kelly and I think, wow, we need to really make sure we get something perfect for Jasmine. But the gifts that these wise men bring are not just valuable gifts. It says they opened their treasure chests and presented their gifts. And I think you probably know this, and it's alluded to actually in the lesson from Isaiah 60, where the prophet talks about a celebration where gifts of gold and frankincense are brought. But the wise men bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and each have a symbolic meaning that points to the bigger story of Christ's life. So not only did they understand that this child who's just been born is the Messiah, but they foretold, that's why they're called wise men, what Jesus' journey would look like. So the gift of gold was understood to be a gift that you would bring to a king. So this child who's been born is not just a king, but the king of all kings. Frankincense was an incense that was used in religious celebrations to connotate the presence of the divine, so that they understood at some level that this child who's just been born is the very embodiment of God. God in the flesh, the very presence of the creator of the world is in the body of this newborn child. Myrrh, which has less inherent value than certainly gold, was used as an ointment or a spice to cover up the smell of a dead body. Not quite as exciting as a gift, but it speaks to these wise men understanding that Jesus' ultimate journey would lead him to the cross and would lead to the tomb, which will become empty. And so these wise men present their gifts to Jesus. They pay him homage, and they understand the bigger picture of what God was up to. And so as we celebrate the season of Christmas, and it's traditional in many, many cultures that they actually wait until Epiphany to open gifts, as we remember the story of the wise men and the gifts that they share, we share our gifts with each other, and not just one day of the year, but throughout the year. Now, the wise men, if a little bit of background on them for those who need that reminder, were not Jewish. It says they came from the east. Most people trace their location to modern-day Iraq, and maybe even the Chaldean Christians trace their lineage to these wise men or magi. And they were of their day astronomers. They watched the night sky and then interpreted the movement of the stars and the planets as signs from God. They were convinced that God spoke through the night sky, and if they were waiting, for the star that would show up that said the Messiah, the promised Messiah of the Jewish people, not of the Magi people, but of the Jewish people, that the star would shine. And so they're waiting and they're watching, they're anticipating. And I think to me, this is the most remarkable piece about the Magi, the wise men. Not just that they could understand what the night sky was doing, but that they were waiting and watching and were anticipating that God would show up. They weren't passively watching or like a neutral scientist just charting down what they saw in the night sky. They believed and trusted that God was at work, and at the right time, if they were diligent enough in their watching, they would see the sign that they've been waiting for. And when they saw it, they took action. They had faith and trust, and they took action, traveling far and wide, following the star to Jerusalem, their interaction with the not-so-great King Herod, and they find their way to Bethlehem. Epiphany, at its root as a word, I tend to think of as like a moment of enlightenment, a moment of insight where we grasp something true, perhaps for the first time. The wise men show a kind of enlightenment because they were focused in the midst of darkness, and darkness takes on many different forms in this world. In the midst of darkness, they were focused on light. In the season of Epiphany, it's really the darkest season of the year. But in the season of Epiphany, we have these contrasting images of light and darkness. And it's very easy to be overwhelmed by the darkness in our life and the darkness in our world. We don't have to look far to find darkness. The wise men are focused on the light. They're expecting God to show up, and they're focused on where that light is shining, and they follow it. For me, the encouragement that I hear from the wise men today, and which I share with you, is to look for the light in this world, to look for the places where God's light is shining, even in the midst of darkness. And a little bit of light can cast out all darkness. To look for the light and to focus on it. It doesn't mean we're blind to the darkness, to the brokenness of the world. It's just that we want to focus our energy on things that are positive, things that are from God, and things that make this world just a little bit brighter. And sometimes we also need to hear that the light that shines in the darkness is within us. We can be the light. We can be the hands and feet of Christ. We can be a beacon of light in a world that needs it so much. So following the wise men, looking for the light, sharing our presence, the presence of our gifts in the world, we have much to offer, much to give of ourselves. And when we give and we learn to be a good giver and a good receiver, then we bring more and more light into the world. So let that light lead and guide us along our path in following Jesus. Amen.